Well, thank you very much for your words of prayer, and thank you for welcoming me back. It's been a couple of years now, 22 I think it was, that I was here last, and it's good to be again with you all. Now, I work for Creation Ministries, as I'm sure you all know, it's on the sign. We are predominantly an information-providing ministry to the church, so we are invited by churches that welcome us. There are some churches around, quite a few of us, and that probably wouldn't welcome us, and we don't force our way in. But it's good to be equipped as a church, not only for ourselves, but also for children, grandchildren, nephews, nieces. And that's why we would love to go to more schools, but that's been kind of made a bit difficult with some past experience as well. So schools are a bit more hesitant, even if they're Christian schools as well. So I come here with some materials. Some of you have already taken advantage of this. There's free brochures and leaflets there. So if you want to take something with you, please do. It's there for you to take. Now let's start on with, I'll tell more about what we have in the back. I'm going to talk to you about dynamic dinosaurs. Now I brought some props here that I'll probably talk to you about. There's some that the children can have a poke around with as well. But one of the things I like to do with the presentation is sometimes start with why is this important, and we get emails written into us. This time it was a man called Robert from Australia, and he wrote the following. He says, I used to avoid conversations where dinosaurs, God, and creation were debated within the secular sphere at work, and then something happened. What happened? Well, he maybe attended a meeting of CMI and he read a book refuting evolution, subscribed to the Creation magazine, and he became what? He became confident, so that now he looks for opportunities to be part of such conversation because he got strength in their faith. Now, I hope that's what I can do today. Maybe many of you or all of you are already strongly, firmly on board. I still hope to encourage you in the faith and equip also the younger ones among us. So, usually we travel in twos, and last time I was here, I was with a colleague, only by a good example set by somebody in the New Testament, but it just so happens that Philip is now in Greece. He's doing some ministry there. I believe he's going to speak to some of the immigrants there, the refugees, so if you remember him in your prayers, do pray for him as well. So, information providing ministry. I'm going to pass around two clipboards, and because I don't have a lovely assistant, you'll have to do some of the work. I'll give it just to the front row, and you can sign up your name or not, and then pass it on, and I'll find the clipboards at the back somewhere, and clear it all up afterwards. So the first one is a free one, InfoBytes. We like to provide information. That gives you a fortnightly update, what we've been up to. If you put your postcode, we'll let you know when we're in the Northern Wales area again, and you get maybe some special deals. So what are some of the things that we would announce with these? Well, for instance, if you like to be at home, and I believe some of the people will view this later at their own leisure, on Friday nights usually, sometimes on a Tuesday, we do webinars still. So those are free to access as well. Sometimes they're a bit steeper or more difficult than the average church presentation. Sometimes not, it depends a little bit. But on the 3rd of May, so that's coming Friday, my colleague Andrew Sibley will be talking about something we get asked a lot about. How do we view all this environmental ethics? Now, I'm not going to take away all his momentum, but of course, as Christians, we are called to look after the planet we've been given, stewardship. But we also say there shouldn't be alarmism and so on. So anyway, I'll let Andrew say more of that, but it needs to be a balanced approach, you believe. So without further ado, I'll just pass around these clipboards, and if you can just pass them round to the back. We're not passing on your information to anyone, and if you don't like it after a few weeks, just unsubscribe, no hard feelings. But meanwhile, while these go around, I'll just continue. So perhaps you think dynamic dinosaurs, is he going to talk about how quickly a T-Rex can run? Well, we could talk about that because I'm sure many of you might recognize this scene from the film Jurassic Park. It just so happened I overtook somebody and then they overtook me on the M6 that had a sign of Jurassic Park on their van. It was some sort of pet service. So maybe in the days of Adam they had dinosaurs as pets, who knows? But no, I don't want to talk about how quickly these dinosaurs can run. That's interesting as well, but not so relevant for the talk today. Let's start with something kind of interacting to wake up our brains. Here you see, does anyone recognize what this might be out of interest? See, yeah? Is the Chinese zodiac? Well done. Yes, so there are depictions of animals here, and of course we recognize many of them. In fact, some of them we can see on farms. For others, you might have to go to a zoo perhaps. And so, all familiar animals, right? Nothing particular. Or there is that one that always stands out. It's like, what is that all about? Well, that's the one I want to talk to you about today. Because although the talk is called Dynamic Dinosaurs, at CMI, we are convinced that the dragons of legend, the name dragons, is very much the same as what we now realize are dinosaurs. So the dinosaurs of history and the dragons of legend, we believe that they are one and the same thing. Now, I'll give more evidence towards that and that people will have seen dinosaurs. But just out of interest, of course, the young people know this, but the word dinosaur means terrible lizard. So that's what that means. It comes from the Greek. Now, here we see a set of teeth. So fossilized teeth, people will look at those and they might come to some ideas. They might have an idea that this could be very well the teeth of a meat eater, but somebody else might think, well, hang on a second, I think it's rather a plant eater. But to be honest, can you tell from the teeth what somebody's or something's diet is? Let's look at this one. We all recognize the giant panda, I hope. And what does the giant panda prefer to eat if he had any choice?
Bamboo.
Yeah. So even though it looks like he's got quite sharp canine teeth at the front of his mouth, it's not for ripping meat and killing animals. He prefers to eat bamboo. What about this skull? So here you see a skull with also some ferocious-looking teeth. And what is this skull? Well, actually, it's a skull of a flying fox. But some of you might know it better as a fruit bat. Now, what does a fruit bat like to eat? There's a clue in the name. It likes to eat fruit. So just because something has fierce-looking, scary-looking teeth, it doesn't necessarily mean it's designed to kill and rip meat of other animals. So we got to put biblical thinking hats on when we approach things, well, of the past and the present and the future. We need to apply biblical thinking in all things. But often the educational system, as I was talking to some of you, is not equipped to do that. In fact, they prefer to do the opposite. Now, I want to talk to you about what the debate of creation and evolution is not before I explain what it is. So here you see two gentlemen. They each have a wheelbarrow that represent a different worldview. You have an evolutionary representative and a creationist representative. And they are all collecting tickets, let's call them pieces of evidence or facts or data. And they put their things in their wheelbarrow. Now, does the referee at the end of the game blow the whistle and these two gents just count who's got the most tickets, the most pieces of evidence, and whoever has the most, they were right all along? Is that how it works? No, of course not. Because if you look very carefully, the ball that they get their tickets from, the pieces of evidence, is the southern hemisphere. Now, I'm not going to presume everybody here is a Christian. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But irrespective of what your beliefs are, what your worldview are, I think we can agree that we all live on the same planet. That means that we all have the same facts. That might come as a shock to you, but everybody has the same facts. Now, you might not have access to a dinosaur fossil bone, but the fact that it exists means, irrespective of what you believe, if you are lucky enough to hold it, it's still there. So, taking this dinosaur bone, an evolutionist might look at it as like, well, this is from such and such an animal that lived hundreds of millions of years ago. But the biblical creationist might say, well, hang on a second, I believe the dinosaurs were land-dwelling animals, air-breathing, created by God on the sixth day, because that's when he made land-dwelling animals. And so the debate between creation and evolution is not about who has the most evidences, who has the most facts, who has the most data. We all have the same, okay? So if some evolutionist has done some measurement about a dinosaur bone, I as a creationist can come with my ruler or my scales. Or perhaps I have a very fancy machine that can analyze what it's made of, and I can do repeat measurements, and we can compare notes. No, the debate is not about that. The debate is how we view the history of those things. How did those things come to be? What happened in the past? So talking about a dinosaur, how did it die? Where did it die? Did it have children before it died? What was it doing when it died? Did it have something to eat for lunch? We don't know. We weren't there. But the Bible does give us clues about what may have happened. And so it's when we talk about the debate of creation evolution and the controversy, etc., it's all about origins. And origins is what we believe about the past, what our presuppositions are, fancy word, but what are our assumptions that we can't prove with science? Because you can't prove the past with science. You can't measure the past. So let me give you an example. This is a fossil of a Parasaurolophus. So that is actually a crested herbivore. Now herbivores, they eat plants rather than meat. And crested, well, it's got this thing that runs along the top of its skull. Some might say that this is 75 million years old. How do we know? Well, it says on the ticket. Is that how it works when we dig up a fossil bone? There's a piece of paper that says how old it is, and then it says underneath it, made in China. Well, actually, there are fossils that are made in China and they're scams, but that's another story altogether. Of course not. There are no tickets attached to a fossil bone that say how old it is. That's the thing. That's an assumption about the past. Let me explain a bit more clearly. This fossil bone, if you and I were to dig this up, then this is the reality. And what is this? Well, we can measure it. We can measure how long it is, how wide it is, how deep it is. We can put it on the scale. We can analyze what it's made up. These are data. These are facts that we can all repeat, measure, and compare notes. We call that operational science. Operational because you can repeat it. You can observe it. Sometimes it's called empirical science. But what about that ticket? What is that? Is that operational science? No. It's somebody's interpretation, somebody's view about the past, about how old it is. And we call that sometimes historical science. Now let me ask you this, and I've hinted at it already. If we dig up this bone, are we digging up the past? When we hold this bone, have we dug up the past? Of course not. The bone is in our hands. Unless we exist in the past, then it would be in the past. But if we hold something, it exists in the here and the now. It's the history of that bone. That's another story. And we can have views about that. And our views, the biblical view, will differ from that of evolutionary people. So keep that in mind, the two different worldviews. We'll come back to using what we've learned now at the end with some fossils. Now, let me summarize very briefly about the evolution's interpretation of the dinosaur. So this is not what I believe, but this is, in a nutshell, the evolutionist idea. So dinosaurs lived hundreds of millions of years ago, the evolutionists would say. And they have three periods in which they existed, which you see there, the Triassic, Jurassic, and the Cretaceous. Now, this cartoon here, it's a simplified example of what we call the geologic column. So those are layers that indeed exist, the oldest ones near the bottom, newest ones near the top, and in those layers you can find dead things. And in some of these layers we do indeed find dinosaur fossil bones. But no dinosaur fossil bones have been found in layers other than the three mentioned. They are not higher up. So the evolutionists would put a time frame on that that ended 65 million years ago. With a lot of death, the dinosaurs died out, went extinct, because there was an asteroid that impacted the Earth on the Gulf of Mexico. And we, as creationists, we believe that there is clear enough evidence that there is indeed an impact crater where they say that there is. We just differ on the timescales. We don't believe it was 65 million years ago. We believe it may have had something to do with Noah's flood, just a bit less than 4,500 years ago. So, again, the crater is there. People can observe it. And if you are rich enough to go and investigate, you can find evidence there. People have made measurements there. So that's operational science. The 65 million years ago, that's the historical bit. That's open to interpretation. Now, before the asteroid impact, there was a lot of other ideas why the dinosaurs stopped being around. So one of them was there was excessive amount of volcano activity. The mammals did a lot better and they took over from these terrible lizards. Some have suggested, well, it was disease that caused their demise. And there's a quote here, a bit tongue-in-cheek perhaps. Cataracts, slip disc, epidemics, glandular problems, and even a loss of sex drive have all been proposed as the reason non-avian dinosaurs perished. I think this is a bit tongue-in-cheek because how do they know about the sex drive of creatures that lived 65 million years ago? I mean, that's just absurd. So it must be somebody having a laugh. But look at this. They call these things non-avian dinosaurs. What does that mean? Avian, that means birds. So non-bird dinosaurs. Another idea is that the dinosaurs aren't extinct at all. They are flitting around between the trees. There are many evolutionists that believe that dinosaurs, some of the dinosaurs, evolved into birds. And so when you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken, you could say that you've been to Kentucky Fried Dinosaur, if you believe this worldview. Clearly, I don't. Now, the evolutionists, they offer usually Archaeopteryx. There's a depiction there. It's a bird that is no longer alive. It does look slightly different than the average parrot or something that you might have seen. But experts all agree, Archaeopteryx, interesting bird, and that's all it is, a perching bird with some features that we don't see so much now. Now you might wonder, how do you fit dinosaurs into the Bible? Because this talk is about dinosaurs. We believe the Bible. How does that work? Well, this is a bit of a trick question. Because how do you fit things into the Bible? Well, the simple answer is you don't. You read the Bible and you let the Bible explain to you. Okay, so we have the history in the Bible given by the Word of God, Jesus. And so we should let the Bible teach us. And we should use that biblical view to interpret things that we see around the world. So for instance, on the theme of dinosaurs, we could read a verse in Genesis 1:25, and God says, let us make man in our image and have our likeness, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the earth, of the air, and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And God created the beasts of the earth also on the sixth day. So, I already said, the fact that they created the land animals, that God created the land animals on day six, that should teach us something about land-dwelling dinosaurs. Because this is the book, this is the revelation that does help us to form a picture of the history of the past. We shouldn't listen to secular people who believe in evolution to tell us what happened. We should trust the one who was there, who did it all, and who is the most reliable eyewitness that there's ever been, because he doesn't lie, and that's the Lord God. So why don't we see the word dinosaur in the Bible? Because surely these are important animals, you know. Everybody talks about them, the evolutionists and the creationists, and I brought a few there and here, of course. So why don't we see that word in the Bible? Well, the English Bible was given to us mostly, really, the King James Version, 1611. That was 230 years before the word dinosaur even existed. Okay, so the word dinosaur was a new word. It was coined by a man called Sir Richard Owen. He was a creationist of sorts, and he was even the superintendent of the Natural History Department of the British Museum. So go figure, if there was such a person now, somebody who's a creationist, even of sorts, not going to happen in the British Museum. Probably you have to be truly involved in the evolution scene. So the reason why we don't see the word computer or smartphone in the Bible, that's the same. These words didn't exist back then. In fact, the whole thing didn't exist. So that's the reason why we don't see dinosaur. Now, I'm going to talk to you a bit about biblical views, and I'm going to talk about dinosaurs, but I'm not going to talk about those flying reptiles, the pteranodons, for instance, or the swimming reptiles, your ichthyosaur or plesiosaur, that's often associated with the Loch Ness monster. Some people call those creatures dinosaurs as well. I don't. I stick to the land animals, but I'm not going to argue with you about it. So that's why I say non-flying reptiles, non-flying dinosaurs. They have legs, they're land animals. They were created on day six with Adam and Eve. So the next question might be coming up into your mind. Aha, does that mean that maybe Adam was on the lunch menu for some of these dinosaurs? Well, I would say no, not originally at least, because God created everything good, in fact very good, and he said that people, but also animals, were meant to be vegetarian. They were to eat vegetables and fruits and plants. And we read that in verse 30. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. So that these little words, and it was so, it's just a confirmation that this is how God planned it, and it wasn't any different. That's what happened. So when evolutionists, maybe even in the church, might say, oh, perhaps God used evolution to create over long periods of time, be very careful, because God didn't speak a strange language. We have a very good translation here. It was so, the way God said it was. Not any different. We don't have to have brain gymnastics to kind of fit the dinosaurs in. We let the Bible teach us. So they were vegetarians. So initially, originally, there was no cause for stress for Adam and Eve at all. But of course, we do know about the Bible, and we do know about Noah's flood. So what do we believe at CMI about dinosaurs in the flood? Well, we believe they survived the flood. We believe that God would have sent to Noah approximately 50 kinds of different animals. So two of each, so about 100 different dinosaurs. And we have the evidence that they came off the ark, and there you have it. Well, it's a bit funny, but there is plenty of evidence that dinosaurs lived up to the time of Noah and beyond. And I'll go over that. So what about Noah's ark? Because people might say, well, these dinosaurs were huge. How did Noah put them on the ark? Well, first of all, we have to realize how big the ark was. And the dimensions are given in the scripture. Now, they're given in a unit that's not so familiar to us. It's called the cubit. And the cubit measures from the elbow to the tip of your finger. And you might say, well, hang on a second. That's different for children and adults. In fact, it's different for men and women. In fact, there's big men and there's smaller men. So taking an average size cubit, you get lengths of approximately 135 meters long by 22.5 meters wide. That's quite sizable. That's very big. There was enough capacity to carry 200 articulated lorries. I don't know if you want to see 200 articulated lorries go by here in the street, but it's going to be one busy, noisy street. And so there is loads of space on the ark. And here you see how that would be. So there you see one, and you can multiply that in the length and then the depth and the height. And here on the bottom right, you see two people, two scale. There was plenty of space on the ark. So much so that there was plenty of space for all the animals that needed to be there. Food, maybe fresh drinking water, and lots of people. The sad story is, we read in the Epistle of Peter that there was only 8 on board, Noah and his direct family, even though he preached righteousness, probably for a long time. Noah was warned, and the flood came. There was a gap of 120 years. I believe he was preaching many a times. So if you talk to people, be it your neighbors, your friends, your family, and you don't get a response, think about how Noah must have felt preaching so long, and only 8 went in the ark. One thing that I don't think is helpful if we draw Noah's ark, cute and cuddly perhaps, but you put 10 animals on there and it's chock-a-block. That's not what the Bible teaches. So I would say refrain from that. Rather, have pictures, talk about it with children or grandchildren in its real dimensions. And here you see a replica made by a fellow Dutchman called Johan Huibers. And he's standing there. I don't know if you can see him there. He's standing there next to it. And there's actually somebody up high, I think, as well. Anyway, it's very big. Oh, that was me. Sorry for that. Now, dinosaurs are reptiles. Because, yes, I do agree with you that some dinosaurs were really big. But many reptiles keep on growing throughout their lives. So for these reptiles that do that, the bigger they are, the older they are. So if you see really, really big ones, you can safely say, okay, those are really old. Now, who would God have sent to Noah? He would have sent younger ones, juveniles, for different good reasons, I think. They are smaller, so there's more space. They eat less, less need for food to Noah carry. And they are fitter, because what was the plan of God after the flood? That all the people and the animals that were on the ark, they were to repopulate the world after the flood was over. So with all respect, you wouldn't send Granny and Grandpa Dinosaur to the boat. You would send juveniles to help accomplish those requirements. And what about dinosaurs? They're reptiles. They all come from eggs. So here you see some eggs, not necessarily a dinosaur. And I have a replica here. So that's a dinosaur. So if young ones want to come and hold it, you're welcome to. The largest dinosaur egg that we found was about 60 centimeters or 2 feet long. So it's about something like this. And it's not round. It's more shaped like a rugby ball. So a bit in that shape. That was the biggest dinosaur egg fossilized that we found thus far. That means that all the dinosaurs, big and small, came from an egg and started really small. Just like you started really small. You were smaller than 1 millimeter at some point when you were fertilized egg. So all these creatures, big as they are, they started really small. Now, and here you see a little triceratops coming out of an egg. You may have guessed his name, Egbert. We thought long and hard about it, but there it is. That's our friend Egbert. But I want to do a little quiz, and you don't have to raise your hand, but here you see me in the morning. Sorry, that's not me. That's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And I've got a question, and I want you to think about what your answer would be if you had to do this in a school test paper. This T-Rex had teeth up to 15 centimeters long. How would this dinosaur originally have been described? A, a plant eater. B, a meat eater. C, a scavenger. Now, a scavenger is something that eats whatever is in his way. Roadkill, I'll have some of that. That's what a scavenger does. Or D, perhaps a plant and a meat eater. Okay? So hopefully, if you've been paying attention, you're thinking, hang on, A is the right answer. Why? Because the question said, how would this dinosaur originally have been described? See, as soon as you hear the word T-Rex, probably because you've seen this in shows or programs or films, you immediately think scary, likes to kill, vicious meat eater. That's what you're thinking. But you need to, for the young ones on here, if you're going to get school exams and test paper, read the question carefully, understand the question, understand the options to answer before you write anything. Because the key word in the question here is originally. And originally God made everything good, and the dinosaurs and people and all the animals were vegetarian. So originally, T-Rex too was a plant eater. Now, there's more information that we can glean from the Bible. And we read in Job 40, starting at verse 15, and we'll see if we can do that now. Behold now, Behemoth, which I made with thee, he eateth grass as an ox. Lo now, his strength is in his loins, and his force is in the navel of his belly. He moveth his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his stones are wrapped together. His bones are as strong pieces of brass. His bones are like bars of iron. He is the chief of the ways of God. He that made him can make his sword to approach unto him. Surely the mountains bring him forth food, where all the beasts of the field play. He lieth under the shady trees, in the covert of the reed and fence. The shady trees cover him with their shadow. The willows of the brook compass him about. Behold, he drinketh up a river, and hasteth north. He trusteth that he can draw up Jordan into his mouth, the river Jordan. He taketh it with his eyes, his nose pierceth through snares. Now, this creature, this behemoth, which is a transliteration from Hebrew for those who are interested, it talks about different things. It talks about having a tail like a cedar. I'm not sure if you're tree experts. I looked this up, I confess. Cedars can grow up to 30 meters tall. That's not a small tree. So here's a cartoon, if you like, of a tale. Now, there are some Bibles that put in their footnotes suggestions what it might be, and some footnotes say that it might be an elephant. This elephant doesn't look too happy about that tale, does he? Others perhaps say it's a hippo. That doesn't look quite right. You can see hippos and elephants in the zoo. They don't have big tails at all. If anything, it's a little teeny tiny thing. What about a sauropod dinosaur? Does that look a bit better? It does to me. However, there's one thing not quite right. This is now an old picture. Because people thought that with the sauropod dinosaurs, it dragged its tail behind him on the ground. But later we've learned from studying anatomy that it actually is up in the air, balancing its long neck, and the sinews, the tendons, are attached to his hip. So every time he takes a step, the tail sways with his movement, almost like a cedar tree. Now, he's called the first of the works of God. That could very well mean one of the biggest, the chief, the highest and standing tall. And it talks about a vegetarian diet. Yes, originally they were all vegetarian, but there are still herbivores, so they only eat plants. So we think that that was indeed a herbivore. What's more, they're finding grass in coprolite. What on earth is coprolite? Well, literally it means dung stones. But a simpler way of saying is fossilized poo. And there you see some examples. I thought I'd put that in, that would be a bit of fun. So scientists have found grass in these dinosaur droppings. And that's interesting because somebody then said, we may have to add grass to the dioramas of dinosaurs we see in museums. What does he mean with that? Look at the date when this was said, 2005. Initially, people believed that dinosaurs evolved and lived long before grass even appeared on the scene. So grass evolved, they say, 30 million or so after the dinosaurs went extinct. But hang on, how can there be grass in dinosaur droppings if it didn't exist until 30 million years after they went extinct? It doesn't make sense. Now, here are some signs from museums that were shared by an American colleague. And alive at the time of the dinosaurs, you see there. And jump to the last sentence. Grasses and flowering plants did not yet exist. So that was what they believed. And from another dinosaur, in brackets, grasses did not yet exist in the time of the dinosaurs. So that's what they used to believe. But check this out. When were these signs photographed? July 2019, and in Atlanta 1, 2010, he forgot the exact year. But this was years after they had learned that grass did exist at the time of the dinosaurs. So the lesson there is, the signs that you see in museums are not always 100% correct. Now, whether they left these signs on purpose, because that was still their worldview, or whether they forgot to change it, I don't know. But just be aware that not everything in a museum is therefore perfectly correct. There are mistakes, whether intentional or by accident. Now, what else can we say that the Hebrew supports dinosaurs? The Hebrew word tanin is found 29 times, and 21 times in the King James Version, which does it really well, it is translated as dragon. Newer translations come up with modern animals, but if you read the context, in many cases, it doesn't fit very well. Like a coyote, I think, is used often. And when you fit the word dragon or dinosaur in that, the context read quite naturally. Tanoth is another Hebrew word that should likewise be translated dragons. Now, should they be the same animal? Are they? You be the judge. Here's a picture coming up of what we call Dracorex Hogwartsia. Apparently that has something to do with Harry Potter. I'm not a Harry Potter expert, but there you go. So the sign in the museum said, is it a dragon or a dinosaur? Well, you be the judge, but I can show you what an artist impression looks like. And there it is. Now, we don't have this book today with me. I say we. I'm used to traveling in twos. I don't have it with me today, but you can find it on our website. So, dragon or dinosaur? I'll let you decide for yourself. I think most of you have seen an image of a dragon. Here's one. This is the Komodo dragon. So I'm cheating a little bit, perhaps. These still live around in Indonesia. But there are dragon legends all over the world. And I want to talk to you briefly about George and the Dragon. I'm sure many of you will have heard of that. I'm not going to talk about whether I believe George and the Dragon is 100% accurate. I want to look at the art that has been done around this story. And here you see a painting from 1440 AD. You can find this in the Netherlands, in the castle there. And in it you see George on a stallion, and in the background there's a damsel in distress, and George is fighting off some sorts of reptilian, some lizard-like creature. Now, look at the horse, look at the man, look at the woman. I think they're all accurately depicted. I believe this artist was competent. They could draw something accurately. So even though I'm not sure what that is that's lying on the ground, I believe that the artist was able to depict it correctly. And people have suggested that this might be a Sophocles bori, which is a smaller dinosaur. Now, the same scene is depicted in this beautiful artwork that you can find in Barcelona. This is not a painting, this is a tapestry. And it's from 1600, so yeah, 400 and a bit years ago. And again, the artwork is astonishing, isn't it? I think this is even a greater piece of art than the painting, to be honest. But you see the man, the horse, the woman, all depicted very accurately. Competent, skillful artist. And so I have no doubt that whatever that creature is, it was depicted accurately by the artist because the artist was competent. And so perhaps this would be a Nothosaurus. Now, what about animals, dinosaurs living together with people? We have to be careful. What do we mean with together? For instance, I could say that you live together with sharks and lions and crocodiles. But I don't mean here in this room or even here in Holywell. I believe we live together with them at the same time. And so often when people talk about the word together, they talk more about time than they talk about space. So I don't believe the dinosaurs were really living closely to the humans. In fact, many animals that we have today, they don't like to be around humans. In fact, when you walk around late at night, you see animals scurrying away, or you hear them sometimes. Because many animals, they have a dread of man. You can read a bit about that in Genesis chapter 9. But what I'm talking about now is, here you see a slightly more interesting depiction of that geologic column. So you have different layers. According to evolutionists, again, they represent many millions of years. But how do the creationists view that then? Because these layers, we do indeed find them under the ground. And sometimes they're exposed when you're on a motorway. Sometimes you see, there's all these layers that you see there. That they're exposed. They're called outcrops. Well, we believe that all these creatures that are found in these layers, they lived at the same time, but they lived in different places. And so we have a habitat zone. And what's interesting is in the lower layers, what you find is a lot of creatures that live near the ocean floors, including seashells like clams. And 95% of the fossil record is made up of those kind of critters. And we think that they were buried down low because they lived down low. And so when Noah's flood was doing catastrophic activity, the things that were near the bottom were buried first and were found later near the bottom. Then if you go up, you see shallower water creatures, and then you go onto the land, and then if you circle along with the land, at the end you find mammals and people, and we don't find pre-flood people fossils, human fossils. We believe that because people were smart, they were created in God's image, they would have run up to higher space. They would have climbed onto floating materials such as trees. Some of the people who live near water would have jumped into boats because they would have had already boats. But no people were found. And I think also any ones that were buried were later eroded. You can ask me that at the end if you want to hear more about that, but I got to move on. Another evidence that dinosaurs lived not all that long ago is dinosaur soft tissue. So here you see two pictures, and people looked at this and they questioned this. Are those blood vessels? Are those blood cells? But they came from a T-Rex bone, 65 million years old. So these are questions maybe that an evolutionist would ask. I wouldn't say that. But they would say, hang on, these kind of organic materials, they wouldn't survive for that long. They wouldn't stay intact for 65 million years and more. they have a lot of other explanations. So some people say, well, it's actually not what you think it is, it's something else. Other people have said, well, it's from somewhere else. That means it's been contaminated. It's not from that dinosaur, but it came from the scientist or something else. And then there are people who say, well, I guess we were wrong with all our decay science experiments. It does preserve for many, many millions of years old. Well, I would raise my hand and say, hang on, there might just be yet another explanation. But let's quickly go through them. It's something else, especially in the beginning when these findings were becoming more and more popular. People said, it's something else, it's biofilm. Now, what is biofilm? I don't know if any of you has a fish, but if you don't clean the fish tank for a long time and you run your finger on the inside of the glass, that kind of slimy stuff, that's kind of what you have to think about when you talk about biofilm. But people looking through microscopes, scientists, they know what they do. They recognize things. And quite quickly you can say, okay, it's not biofilm. People know the difference between blood cells or biofilm. So that was rejected. People have said, well, it could be contamination from somewhere else. I have sympathy for that idea. That could be the case. But in essence, they are criticizing the scientists who were part of these findings, who are really top-notch scientists. In fact, so much so that one of them, who's most famous for this, her name is Mary Schweitzer, she had her technician do the test 17 times before she finally believed, wow, I guess it is really what we think it is. She wouldn't believe it until she's done the same experiment 17 times. So here we go. Early 1990s, claims of DNA recovered from million-year-old fossils are now widely regarded as modern contaminants. So that's a statement that still people sometimes have, despite of the carefulness that people do these experimentations with. However, could it be contamination through its history? If these things are indeed 65 million years old, could some contamination happen in that long period? But I would say, yes, that's a very long period. All sorts of things could have happened. On other grounds, I reject the 65 million years. Scripture, first and foremost. But okay, I'll let people have this argument. Now, what about it preserves indeed so long? So people have done experiments of how things decay, and you just have to open a carton of milk and leave it outside of the fridge. Within days you have yogurt, and in a few weeks you have yogurt with mushrooms, don't you? You do. That's how things decay. It doesn't stay nice, it doesn't stay fresh, it rots, it decays. So, but people are willing to believe all sorts of things as long as it doesn't match the Bible. But that means that we're criticizing scientists who've done these decay experiments. So they measure how quickly things decay. So in a bone, here's another quote, at an ideal preservation temperature of minus 5 degrees Celsius, effectively every nucleotide bond, that means every DNA letter pair, would be destroyed after a maximum of 6.8 million years. That's a maximum. It doesn't mean that it's therefore that old. It would mean that there would be absolutely no chance it would survive any longer. But people have found DNA in dinosaur material, which should be 65 million years old, according to them. So how can that be? Of course, this is a very good scenario, minus 5. That's why we have stuff in freezers, because it's negative temperatures, and it keeps our food okay for a longer time. Do you think reptilians would be happy to live at minus 5 centigrade? No, I think they would probably prefer 25, maybe even 30, kind of balmy and tropical. So this is the best case scenario. If you have hotter temperatures, everything decays even quicker. Think about your carton of milk. So no, I would reject this as well. But people have blind faith about the past. And if they don't want to believe what's in the Bible, as I said, they believe anything. And I'll quote you later, somebody you'll know. This is Matthew Collins, a very clever scientist. On the question, can iron from hemoglobin that's found in the blood preserve tissue and proteins for millions of years? And he said, I have yet to hear a plausible explanation for how soft tissues can be preserved for this long. For me, they're defying basic chemistry and physics. Iron may slow down the decay process, but it's not clear how it could be arrested or stopped altogether. And then another quote, he says, proteins decay in an orderly fashion. I would agree. We can slow it down, but not by a lot. So if people want to believe that somehow these things continue to exist for millions of years, he's saying they are defying basic chemistry and physics. And I would agree. Again, people will believe anything to avoid the reality of Scripture. Now, why is there so much confusion, even among evolutionists? Because they have already opted at least three different scenarios, and I would say there should be a fourth from the biblical point of view. How can scientists have so different views with regard to an observed phenomenon? The answer is that there is no unbiased study of raw data, but always an interpretational perspective involved in the analysis of fossil patterns. Do you see there the experimental science, something is observed, a phenomenon, and then the historical science, i.e. the interpretation, what happened in the past? Two different things. And there's a lot of confusion. And why do evolutionists have such a different explanation than creationists? Because they start from completely different, and dare I say, opposite worldviews. They are not compatible. That's why they talk about the same thing in such radically different ways. So, from my point of view, yes, these are blood vessels, blood cells. Yes, they are from a T-Rex bone. There were plenty of people there that witnessed it, but it's not 65 million years old. I think this was closer to 4,400, 500 years. Noah's flood. So that's how old I believe they are. Now, if you found these last few slides rather complicated and confusing, remember this. Here you see two evolutionists having an argument about such findings. It's something else. It's not millions of years old. And the other responds, no, no, it is original from that bone. And it is millions of years old. From now on, you can come into the mix and raise your hand and say, well, maybe it's original from this creature, but it's only thousands of years old. Maybe then you should do a runner because they might laugh or they might want to pick up a fight with you now. Best to let them fight amongst each other and get on with things. So I've got one final example of things not being that old, and then we'll wrap up. I want to talk to you briefly about living fossils. What are they? I'm going to give you two examples. The coelacanth is a fish. And the coelacanth, according to evolutionists, lived hundreds of millions of years ago. It became extinct at roughly the same time as the dinosaurs became extinct. Why? There are no fossils in the same layers that we find human fossils in, so the top ones, but they are found in the layers that we find dinosaurs in. However, they are found alive in Madagascar, or off the coast of Madagascar, which is that island of the east of Africa there. It looks just like the fossils. So they took a live coelacanth, well, maybe they had one that was dead, and they compared it to the fossils that they have, which there are plenty of. It's like, it's remarkable. It looks just the same. Okay? So, using what we've learned earlier in the presentation, let's analyze now which of these statements are true and which are not. So the first one, the red one, the red cross, it became extinct. Well, no, because they found live ones. In fact, they found even more near Indonesia after that. Now, the fact that they've not found layers in the same as human fossils, but yes, in the same layers as dinosaurs, that is true. Up to this point, I've not been told anything different. But remember, those layers don't represent time of millions of years. We believe that they represent sequence of burial, all happening during Noah's flood. They were found alive off the coast of Madagascar. Yes, that's why they're not extinct. And they just look alike, the fossils. Now, what about that top statement then, living hundreds of millions of years ago? I would say there is no need to believe that because all the science points to they are alive now. They see look just the same as the fossils. The hundreds of millions of years are just in people's belief in their worldview. There is no need for that. Of course, if you're an evolutionist, you do need the millions of years. Anyway, that's another story. Let's do one more. The Wollemite pine looks like this, and it lived, they say, about from 90 million years ago, but it went extinct 2 million years ago, approximately. This era, of course, overlaps a bit with the dinosaurs, But it is found alive in Australia. And here you see down under, sorry, that's the wrong way around, under, there's Australia. They are found alive there. And it just, again, looks just like the fossils that they have of these Wollemi pines. They nicknamed this tree the dinosaur tree. Using, again, our operational and historical difference of science. Became extinct 2 million years ago? No, because they found it alive. Looks just like the fossils? Yeah, that's just having one next to the other and comparing. And people have done that. What else? The top one, therefore it lived from 90 million years ago. There's no need for that. If you want to believe in it, that's your prerogative. But there's no need for the millions of years. Now what about the one in the middle? This era overlaps with the dinosaurs. I would say yes. Why would I say that? I bet you were thinking that it didn't because the dinosaurs are so many millions of years ago. What's the Wollemi pine? It's a tree. When were the trees made? Day 3. When were the dinosaurs made? Day 6. Did they continue to live together after the first week was finished? Yes. They continued to live. So they did live together at the time of creation, and a long time beyond. So I'm going to wrap up now and just draw some final conclusions about our dinosaurs. They did really live. I believe they were really there. There are people, even within the church, that think they didn't exist. Or I've heard somebody say, oh, the dinosaurs are Satan. I said, that's problematic because theologically, I believe Satan can only be in one place at the same time. And there were many dinosaurs roaming all over the place. So that's problematic. Most fossils that we find, not just dinosaurs, but other fossils too, I would say are from Noah's flood. That did a lot of damage, a lot of death, a lot of quick burial. Birds were created on the fifth day. They didn't evolve from dinosaurs, which were created on the sixth day. People have seen dinosaurs. Maybe they refer to them as dragons. That's just a different word for the same being. The Bible supports this with, for instance, Tanin and Behemoth. That was the part of Job 40, for instance. Soft tissue that I've talked about is a strong evidence for dinosaurs and other things not being millions of years old. And our colleague in Australia, Don Batten, has got a list of 101 evidences from science, from secular science, listing all sorts of reasons why the world is not millions of years old, but just thousands of years old. And in the top 10, there were 3, if I'm not mistaken, that talk about soft tissue. So you can find this article on our website and you can have a look. And the references are all there. These are all publications in scientific journals. The living fossils that we talked about at the end, and that look just the same as the supposed really old ones, they mean, they suggest there was no evolution, there was no long periods of time. And this one, I think we can attribute it to Napoleon, who said some people will believe anything as long as it's not supported by the Bible. So that's my conclusions, but I just want to have one more minute of your time and then I'll open for questions. We've seen that dinosaurs and dragons are different words for the same creature. That's not unusual. We have different words meaning the same thing. That is a projector, but some people call it a beamer. It's the same device. It projects a nice image on the screen. But dinosaurs and dragons, same creature. The Bible speaks of an other being that has different names. Can you guess who that might be? I think most of you will already get it. It talks about the Lion of the tribe of Judah, but also the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. Of course, I'm talking about the Lord Jesus. Interesting as dinosaurs are, and I find them fascinating, I like chatting about them. Way more important, infinitely more important, is the Lord Jesus and what we do with his death and his resurrection and his sinless life that he lived. We need to be followers of him and followers of his word, which is correct from the very first verse to the very last verse. So I want to just promote a few more things. This is the Creation Magazine. I heard one of you at least already subscribed to it. So if you want to get not a subjective, but an objective opinion of how what it's like, talk to your friends from church. It's a four quarterly magazine for the family. Okay, so we send it out to your doormat, and usually we have a few pages of focus items. Those are items that happened in the past few months, usually two or three per page, so really quick and snappy, and gives you a biblical interpretation of something that's happening in the world, scientific. We write about all sorts of animals. I'm not too keen on spiders. I'm not afraid of them either, but there is apparently one here in the picture, and it's really a good hider. But I like to write about cuddly, fluffy animals, and there was a giraffe born in Tennessee, America, without spots. That is not evolution. She's just not got the information that makes the spots. Her mama still loves her. She's still a giraffe, and there are other animals in that family that could be spotless. So this is just something like, okay, these things happen, but it's still a giraffe. I showed this one actually to my five-year-old. I said, what animal do you think that is? She said, oh, a giraffe. Stupid question. Why are you asking me these easy questions? Yeah, of course. She recognizes that. We have articles about the Bible, the Old Testament. I'm doing series of five questions with letdown answers. Sometimes I get a question and people hope that I say this, but then I say that. So this is an article about that. And we get lots of testimonies from all over the world. There's a pastor in Adelaide, Australia. The biblical message of creation presented in the magazine is needed to address the issue of faith we are now facing. The theory of evolution threatens to undermine the very foundations of the Christian faith. And indeed, it does. If God used evolution with all its death and suffering long before Adam was around, then we can't blame Adam for bringing death into the world. Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. If God used evolution, because death was all around long before Adam. But of course, that God doesn't exist. That's not the God of the Bible. Anyway, I digress a bit, but you can ask me about it. It's a family magazine, so a family here with four children who are being equipped for a life in God's service. The magazine has helped build in them an appreciation of our almighty and all-wise God and to recognize counterfeit science. So we have articles that show the design of many wonderful animals, for instance, but we also highlight the wrong thinking of evolutionists in the magazine. And this one from India. In my 45 years of Christian ministry experience, I've never seen or read anything like this. Great and awesome magazine. Yes, it is a miracle. It's not really a miracle. We just have enthusiastic people that write articles and some really quality people that put it all together in the magazine. But yeah, I'm pleased with their excitement. We go into over 100 countries with the magazine, so it goes worldwide pretty much. You can get it digital, share it with five devices within your family. So this is what the form looks like. If you sign up for a year, or if you give a subscription to somebody, or if you extend an existing subscription, all of that, you get a back issue for free. If you do it for 2 years, you get the back issue, and you can get either a DVD or a download. So the DVD is called Which Gospel? It talks about creation as well. Or Elephants in the Room, which talks about evolution as well. So I'm going to pass these clipboards around. You don't have to sign up, but if you do, come and see me afterwards, give me some money, and I'll give you your presents. If you don't want to sign up, just give it to your neighbor. That's fine. And then, okay, I said I was going to say something about the book table. We have a few books there. Exploring Dinosaurs with Mr. Hip, that's good for young teens. It talks about dinosaurs, similar to this. If you have slightly younger teens, so kind of 8 to 11, they can read this, Discovering the Truth About Dinosaurs, by themselves. It's put to rhyme. If you have younger children, you can read it to them. And there is a parent-teacher section in the back. So I thank you for your attention. You've been really brave, and you've been sitting there for nearly an hour. So if you have a question for me, please ask it now. I'll be around. I hear there's food, so I'm not going to run away too quickly. But yeah, any questions?